I want to remind us that during this season of Lent, there are some opportunities to pray, either as we come on Sundays, or you might just happen to be driving by the church during the week. The doors are generally open, definitely from 8 to 3, sometimes after 3, and you're always welcome to come into this space. This is an opportunity as we journey to the cross during the season of Lent. There's a basket of rocks here. And the rocks might represent the hard things in our life, the things that we carry, the things that weigh us down perhaps, the burdens. And you're invited to come and to hold, but also come and to experience release as you lay those burdens down, as you surrender those burdens into God's care and trust God's presence. Another opportunity just to remind us is these prayer beads in a basket here, just 3 beads, where you're invited to kind of hold it in your hand, have it in your pocket, maybe on the dashboard of your car. And there's a phrase that we're invited to carry with us each day through Lent. And the phrase is breathe. It's always helpful to breathe. But I talk a lot about the second breath. Not that first breath of reaction, but take that second deeper breath where our wisdom, our strength, our love resides. Breathe, be present, because much of our anxiety, much of our fear is because we're living somewhere other than the present. Living in the past, living in the future. So it's breathe, be present. And be kind. This is a little exercise, hopefully, that we say this phrase many, many times throughout the day as a way to be aware, to pay attention, and to be intentional. You know, to recognize that every moment, in many ways, shapes the day and shapes our lives. Then in the corner, you will see our wall of Jerusalem, and that is an opportunity, if there's a prayer on your heart, to write the prayer on a strip and to tie that strip onto the wall of Jerusalem. And that prayer might be for others, to carry someone else's burden and to tie that strip. So I encourage you to take advantage of these opportunities to take that inward journey. Would you pray with me? Amazing God, as we take this opportunity to catch our breath, to take a deep breath, help us to be present. That you might startle us with your presence. Amen. I absolutely love the story of the little boy who was at the carnival and he wanted cotton candy, and he got the cotton candy, and it was the end of the day, so the cotton candy person decided, well, you know, I only have so much left, I'll just give this lad the whole lot. So this young man about so high got this heap full of cotton candy about this big. And his dad came, and dad looked at the cotton candy and immediately thought of dentist bills. And the dad looked at his son and said, "Son, how in the world are you going to eat all of that?" And this little boy, without blinking an eye, without hesitating, looked his dad in the eyes and said, "Well, I'm much bigger on the inside than I am on the outside." And I think that's one of our challenges, is to recognize that maybe we are bigger on the inside than we realize. I love Mary Oliver, who's one of my favorite poets. And Mary Oliver said, "What will you do with that one wild, precious life you were given? What will you do with this one precious wild day that you were blessed with? As Parker Palmer, another one of my favorite writers, wrote a fantastic book called Let Your Life Speak. That your life speaks, whether you realize it or not. The question is, what is it saying? How will your life speak today? If I asked you to write down right now, okay, what are the three words that your life speaks? What would those words be? And would they be the words you want them to speak? And might there be words deep inside that maybe you have either not even discovered yet or just not claimed? So we're talking a lot about this inward journey and outward passion and how the two of them have to kind of go together. Because if we just took the inward journey, and that's all we focused on is the inward journey, you know, that might end up being a little narcissistic. It might end up being kind of a little self-absorbed and self-focused. I mean, if I just spent my entire time on the top of a mountain with my legs crossed and going om, that might be helpful to me, but if I stayed there, I'm not sure it would be a whole lot of help to anybody else. So we need that outward journey, that outward passion. But really, if we just focus on the outward passion without the inward journey, I think that is the shortest route to burnout. If we're not tapping into something we need inside. We're much bigger on the inside than we realize. If we're just focused on the outward journey without the inward journey, you know, it could end up being pretty ego-driven, where we're just kind of chasing needs that we want to chase without discernment. Is this why I'm on this earth? Is this the song that I'm put on this earth to sing? Mother Teresa said that. Every single person has a song to sing that the world needs to hear, that only you can sing. So we need the two together, the balance of the inward and the outward. I think we spend so much energy, I think, often trying to be people we are not created to be, that we're not called to be. And sometimes I wonder if we spend so much energy trying to be people we're not, because maybe we think we're not okay or we're not enough. We heard the story of Moses, and I love this story, and I'm going to get to a part of it in a second. But you know, Moses hears God in the burning bush, and he's sent to set the people free. Moses initially says, you know, I'm not enough. I stutter. It can't be me. And then once he finally says, okay, I'll go, Moses says, well, how do I do this? What will I use? And God says, look what's in your hand. He was holding a staff. He was a shepherd. And God said, that's all you need. I am not calling you to be someone you're not. I'm calling you to be you. I'm calling you to express your gifts, your passion. There's a wonderful story of a rabbi, Zusa, who said, when I get to the end of the world and the next world, I'm not going to be asked, why were you not Moses? I'm going to be asked, why were you not Zusa? So what's your sweet spot? Do you have a sweet spot? Apparently, I've been told that, you know, when you golf, I love to golf. I've been told there's actually a sweet spot. I've yet to find it, but I've been told that if you swing, there's a sweet spot in the club that if you hit it just right. I know the spot in the club that sends the golf ball to the house over there, but I'm told there's a sweet spot. I was just in the store the other day looking for a heart rate monitor, and because this heart rate monitor, it advertised, this monitor will help you find your sweet spot. Now, exercise and sweet spot seem like a mutually exclusive to me, but I thought, cool, it said this heart rate monitor will help you find that peak efficiency, where your heart rate will be at a place that it will burn the most calories and help you to arrive at the most physically fit you can be, your sweet spot. So then I started to think, is there a spiritual sweet spot? Is there a place where we're most alive? Is there a place where we're most living from our center, from our passion, from our giftedness, from our truth, from our calling? And it just flows from that place. Is there a place, a spiritual sweet spot, that little boy, I'm much bigger on the inside, where we're living from that hope, that courage, that strength, that love? And I think there is. Friedrich Buechner, another one of my favorite writers, said your calling, your sweet spot, is when your deep gladness meets the world's hunger and need. Inward, outward. Where they meet, Buechner says, that's holy ground. I love the story of Moses and that part where he sees the burning bush. Now, in the desert, I am told that burning bushes were not actually that unusual. What was unusual about this particular burning bush is it burned and it didn't consume itself. It just kept burning. It didn't burn up. And we're told in the story that God says, remove your shoes. This is holy ground. Well, what is it about that ground that's holy? And I was thinking about that. I don't know about you, but in my life, there are times and opportunities where I have things I'm passionate about. And after a while, they kind of burn up and go away. Does that ring true to you as well? There are things, if I listen, there are burning bushes that burn indelibly in my soul and continue to burn. I wonder if that's holy ground. Because I know there are some things I just soon not know that's there. One experience I had, I remember when Lori and I were in Thailand, she was working with intercountry adoption, and we were at an orphanage in Nong Khai. And we had been there a couple days, and there was one little boy about 8 years old who was convinced that we had come to take him home. So when it was time for us to go catch our train, he sat on the steps. And all I remembered seeing is the one teardrop down his cheek. That's burned in my soul. For whatever reason, as much as I've tried to forget that face, I can't forget that face. And that face is right next to the face in the treatment center I worked at, of the boy who was 16, the fourth treatment center he'd been at for drug addiction, 16, who had no idea at all how precious he was as a child of God. So these things are burning in my soul, this sense of this passion I have for people to realize and experience their worth as human beings, to realize and experience that they are children of God, loved, beloved, not for what they can do, but for who they are. That is a passion of mine. And my deep gladness is right now, in case you haven't noticed. I like to talk. And my deep gladness is I love to speak. And I find that where my deep gladness meets the world's need, that need for people to know that they're loved, when those come together, it's a sweet spot that helps me to experience how big I am on the inside. So this morning I want to invite Judy Osgood to come forward for a little bit of conversation, because I experience Judy, her life speaks, and her life speaks of passion and compassion, and I experience Judy as a person who lives in her sweet spot. And so I wanted her, what I'm going to do from time to time, a few weeks ago, Dave Hallowell joined me up here. I am just blown away by your stories. I am blown away by the way in which your lives speak. So be prepared. I may move alongside you and say, let's come up here and talk about that. Because I want your story to be heard. So I am so thankful that Judy's willing to do this. And to me, you exude passion. And that outward passion that's part of our journey. I would love us to be able to hear a little bit about where that passion comes from.
Okay. Stephen, many years ago, I had an extraordinary experience that has had a profound and lasting impact on my life. Way back in June of 1978, we lost our 16-year-old son, Eric, to a toxic reaction to the chemotherapy drugs that he was taking for bone cancer. The following spring, when Easter rolled around, Dave was in England giving a scientific paper at a meeting there. Our daughter Kelly was taking her junior year abroad in England, and I was home alone with the dog. I went to Maundy Thursday service, a solemn service, but for some reason I expected to feel holy or really lifted up despite the type of service that it is, but I had a very different experience. A few minutes into the service, I was somehow transported through time and space to the foot of the cross. And I literally heard the sound of the nails being pounded through Jesus' hands and feet. I saw the pain in his face. I saw Mary kneeling and felt her agony. But most important, I realized that God understood how I felt. I realized that he felt pain because he was a bereaved parent and he had watched his son die too. And he could have stopped it. He could have, any time he said, that's it, Jesus. Come on, you've done enough. He didn't do it. He let Jesus die so that I could be with my son again, so that every mother could be with their child again. And I was overwhelmed by that love, a place inside me I didn't even know existed. And my life has never been the same since then.
Yeah. Thank you. Can you share a little bit about experiencing that sense of love, that sense of God being with you in such a profound way, how that has changed your life, how that then is manifested in the outward journey.
Well, let me tell you this. It didn't take the pain away overnight because I still had a lot of grief work to do, but it changed my perceptions. I hadn't realized how much I had been focused on myself and on Eric, and I had forgot about the rest of the world around me. And after that revelation of how much God loves me, I began to see other people's pain and be sensitive to what they were dealing with too. And over time, when I was able to do so, I began to reach out to people to find ways that I could try and be God's hands and feet here on earth, because so many people had done things to try and help us. And I discovered every time I did something for somebody else, I was the one that got the help. I mean, it didn't seem fair, but I felt like I got more out of it than whoever I did something for it. And I've tried to make that a way of life. If I lived to be 1,000 years old, I could never say thank you to God. So I simply try to make my life a life of gratitude. And something else that you talked about a little bit ago, I was so afraid that we were going to lose Eric that fear just wrapped around me like a cloak. Well, we did lose Eric, and what I discovered was I didn't lose God because he walked with me through it, and he walked with David and with Kelly. And so it was as if when Eric died, fear walked out the door. And it freed me to do all sorts of things that, you know. People will say to us, aren't you afraid of things that you go and do? No. There's no reason to be afraid. God will be with us whatever we're doing.
You are clearly, you clearly hear the cries outward. You clearly listened and you hear the cries of others and respond. What do you experience as your deep gladness inside? You know, that sense of calling where our deep gladness meets the world's hunger. How do you experience your deep gladness?
You know, that changes from time to time. Certainly, what is important to me is helping other people see what they can do to make a difference in this world, because there are things that all of us can do, and that helps me when I can do that. I like doing that. I guess that's my deep gladness. As far as what enables me to continue to do all that is concerned, that's my spiritual practices that keep me going. Now don't laugh, Stephen, but I'm one of these visual people that kind of has to see what they think on paper. If I write my thoughts down, oh yeah, that's what I meant, that's what I thought. And I keep a prayer journal that's really important to me. And it's got a number of sections and I update it every week. And when I write in it every week, that helps me to think creatively about what I can do. Where can I go from here?
Yeah, terrific.
And.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
No, I didn't tell you one more thing.
Okay.
Never give a lady a mic. I just wanted to share how much this church is important to me. I need to be here. I need to be here on Sunday mornings. I need to sing and thank you, Julie, for the beautiful songs that you bring us. I need the challenge of a sermon. I need the comfort of communion. This is my filling station. I have to come and get hugs and smiles and conversation and all those things to get me through the week. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, if we could, yes. I want to remind you that it's my deep gladness to get in front of a group of people and talk. So I so appreciate Judy's willingness to share her story and to remind us that even in the darkest places, that God certainly doesn't cause or will for us. But amazingly how God reaches into those places. Amazingly how God is able to rise us up and help our story continue to become part of God's story of redeeming the world with love. One last story. There's a wild dove asked a coal mouse, "What is the weight of a snowflake?" "Nothing more than nothing," was the answer. The coal mouse said, "Then let me tell you a marvelous story. I was perched once on a branch of a fir tree near the trunk, and it was snowing. It was a blizzard. Not a violent kind of blizzard, more like a dream where the snowflakes gently fall. I had nothing better to do, so I decided to count the number of snowflakes that settled upon the twigs and the branches and the needles on my branch. There were exactly 3,471,952. When suddenly, one more snowflake fell. Nothing more than nothing, you would say. And the branch broke. At that point, the little mouse telling the story scurried off. And the dove, who ever since Noah's time had been a symbol of hope, thought for a while, you know, maybe all it takes is one voice, one heart, one person's giftedness for a new world to be born. So as the offering is received this morning, I invite you to think a little bit about the way in which your life speaks and the way in which your life is summoned to speak.